Hello there, and welcome to my podcast, Conversations in Noosa. Holly Pittman is a Canadian from Ottawa whose interest in travelling the world was sparked by books and films. She's been president of the Noosa Film Society, and you know there's a waiting list of more than 350 people waiting to join the society, with Sydneysiders and Melburnians adding their name to the list even before they permanently move to Noosa. Being president means Holly gets to attend a lot of film festivals all over the world. And in the first half of our chat, we'll talk about the criteria for selecting films to show members of the Noosa Film Society. And we'll discuss what kind of people are part of the Film Society. In the second half of our chat, we'll talk about how new filmmakers are funding their work with the help of social media. We'll talk about what's happening in the UK, where distributors are simultaneously releasing a movie in a cinema and on-demand TV in the comfort of your own home. Plus, we'll discuss new technology like drones and virtual reality and why 3D is slowly falling out of favour.
My dad was a cartologist, and he made maps. He worked for the government, obviously Ottawa being a government city, and he drew maps of the Northwest Territory for ships. And originally he did them by hand, and then gradually it became more sophisticated and it was done more on machine. But that was his career, and my mom worked a little bit, but then she stayed at home and looked after five kids. I wanted to travel. I always wanted to travel. And I was scolded severely not going to university. I had the grades, but I
scolded by her.
Scolded by my counseling people at school. Not so much my parents. They weren't encouraging or discouraging. They just wanted me to be happy. So I decided against going to university, and I went to a TAFE college, and I studied secretarial science, legal secretarial science, because I knew I could get a job with that background anywhere in the world. And really, because I wanted to travel, I thought, well, it's a short course. I can do that. I'll go off. I'll travel. I'll be able to find work. I'll be able to work.
And what was it that instilled that desire to travel? Because I've only discovered, you know, recently, travel's a great educator. Forget about the kind of whether you've got a diploma in a frame, but you know, for me, but you have to have that. Something has to spark that inside of you. What was it for you? Did you read a lot of books and you know, about far off places and geography and think I'd love to see that or this or?
Well, no, geography was one of my weakest points. I didn't know where anything was. I mean, I was lucky to find America on the map, which is pretty embarrassing. I mean, no one wants to find America anymore anyway. But yeah, so I guess it was reading. I'm a big reader. It was watching movies because it takes you to a different place. It was the fact that I didn't have any strong urge to settle down straight away. I got married quite young, but no need to settle down and buy a house and have children, and more wanting to explore. So honeymoon was hitchhiking across Canada. Normally, Canadians do the same thing as Australians. Often they go abroad and they go to England because it's, you know, sort of Europe.
Part of the Commonwealth.
My husband and I decided to go in the opposite direction. So we went down through the States, through Hawaii. We went to Fiji, Samoa, and ended up in New Zealand for a year working, and then ended up in Australia working, which was very easy at the time, all being part of the Commonwealth. Time passed and we were having a lot of fun in Sydney and we were meeting a lot of friends, and I hate winter.
I hate the cold.
No, I don't like the cold. I'm not a skier. So I thought, wow, there is life after snow. So I just never ended up going back to Canada to live. I've gone back many, many times to visit, nearly every year while my parents were still alive, but not with the intention of moving back. I worked as a legal secretary, then went into strong admin and worked for all kinds of different companies. I worked in the fashion industry. I worked for a roofing company that did waterproofing. Then I worked for an interior designer. And then I went back to Randwick TAFE and did interior design, and was very interested in that because I liked the creativity of it. So when I ended up here, I ended up working for an interior designer. So that was very cool.
Yeah. And what was it that drew you to Noosa? Had you holidayed here?
Yes. Yeah, right. It was the old holiday thing. Living in Sydney, every holiday we came up and we sort of went to different parts of mostly Parisian, but up in Noosa, and then relocated to Brisbane very briefly, but didn't find Brisbane close enough to any really good beaches. So it was either you had to go to Bribie Island or down to the Gold Coast. So headed up to Noosa and then ended up in Noosa probably 25 years ago.
Have you always been interested in film?
Always been interested in film. And it was my mom. She used to drag me to the cinema all the time.
Yeah.
And we used to go to the drive-in cinema. And TV wasn't such a big deal back then. I mean, it was mediocre at the best. And it was black and white. And
what decade are we talking about? The 70s?
Yeah, the 70s. Yeah. Well, the 70s. And it was just a big experience, a big outing to go to the movies.
Yeah.
And she took me to all kinds of movies. And I guess I just started to really like them. Yeah.
Do you have one that's for me, because my dad would take me to the movies? And it kind of sounds like a bit, but you've got to think the same era. Was Born Free. It was one of the first movies I remember that my dad took me to, and just the excitement of being in a movie theater in a cinema in a small town and watching that movie. I haven't seen that movie for many decades. But can you recall
one of the moments of movie for me when I was younger was actually going to the drive-in. I was going to see Ben-Hur. And I think I was probably 10 or 11. And I was so excited to go to the drive-in, and we went. And then there was that really demanding scene when they're in the chariot race and there's a lot of blood and the chariot's falling over and the horses are not doing well. And I was traumatized. I was like, oh. And then we also had these grape jelly and Philadelphia cream sandwiches. So that made me feel really sick. And I was watching the movie, and then I went into the main sort of amenities section, and then I couldn't find the car. So it was, and they had to announce my name over the little speaker system for them to come and get me. So, I mean, the whole thing, that was a very memorable, not particularly positive, but I certainly remember that film.
You would.
Yeah, it was, yeah. And then I think the movies that stay with me are the strongest movies, which doesn't necessarily mean that most enjoyable from being amused by them. So, films like, Clockwork Orange and Romper Stomper and Once We're Warriors, they're films that you remember because their message is so strong. Those are the ones that stay with me. But certainly I like a lot of foreign films with subtitles. Run Lola Run is a fantastic, thrilling movie. I mean, I've got a lot of DVDs at home and I watch them over and over. Yeah.
Yeah. I remember the first movie I went to see at the drive-in. I was going to ask you, do you miss that drive-in experience?
Not so much now. I think then it was
the speaker on the window.
Yeah. I think then it was a novelty and it was like an experience with all the other kids and it was fun. And I understand your drive-in cinemas were a little bit different here.
In what way?
I thought that sometimes you just sat on the outside of like in the back of the pickup cars.
Oh, you mean like
because it's more outdoors, you don't have to stay in your car.
Again, you may have seen that from they turn the panel van around.
That's it.
They'd have a mattress
that's
in the
it.
Back.
Yeah.
You're right.
Yeah.
But Jaws was the first movie that I saw
really?
at a drive-in, where I grew up.
That was a scary one.
Obviously, you have a great passion and a love for film because you are... what's your involvement with the Noosa Film Society? What's your role there?
I'm president.
You're president of that?
Yes, and I've been... when I moved to Noosa, shortly after I moved to Noosa back in the 90s, I got involved with the Film Society on their committee. So I've really been on the committee since then in all kinds of roles.
If you talk to locals about the Noosa Film Society, one thing you hear is, oh, man, that waiting list.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, man, I can't get in there. Tell me, what kind of numbers are we talking
about? Well, it's challenging because the Film Society has grown. We started with about a couple of hundred members. Now we have just under 2,000. And so as it grows, we need to accommodate more and more people, put more screenings on. It's just a lot more work for our volunteer committee. So at the moment, we've probably got 350 people, maybe over 350 on a waiting list. And then each year we invite, as people come off the waiting list, some people do move away. And some people die. I mean, it's a terrible thing to say, but people do resign, and then we fill the vacant positions and we increase the membership slightly each year. Hmm. So it can take a couple of years, but I mean, a lot of people now are sort of looking forward to moving to Noosa, and they put their name down on the waiting list, and they're still living in Sydney. It's a bit like going to an exclusive school.
So what's that driver? Why do you think people are so...
I think there's a lot of reasons. I think that people like to go to the movies with their friends, and a lot of their friends are in the film society. So they go out and they have a drink first. They go down to the Village Bike and, you know, have something to eat. They go over to the cinema or they have coffee afterwards and they chat about the film with their friends. So it's a social activity. I think the economy of it is, it's quite an economical way. We screen 30 films a year. I think it's the fact that the films we show, you can't really see unless you're in a capital city. They're not brought up here, although The Majestic at Nambour is doing a fabulous job now. They're really, really picking up their international film schedule.
Well, what's the criteria for a movie to be shown as
well,
part of
we look at, firstly, we don't particularly obviously want to screen things that Event Cinema is putting on, which might even be at Maroochydore. So we look at that. We look at what they've won, like what awards they've won, what festivals they've gone through, the reviews that they're getting, you know, like on all of the different social media, you know, Rotten Tomato and that sort of thing. Myself personally, I go to a lot of festivals. So a lot of films, foreign films, and not only just foreign films, but anything that's a little bit alternative, go through the festival circuit. So they're either at the Sydney Film Festival, Melbourne, Brisbane, and often, like, the Sydney Film Festival is in June. So then the films going through that festival may not be released for a year or so. They're taken up by distributors if they look like they have potential, but they might just sit on the distributor's shelves. So it's good to see those at so that you have some knowledge of the film before, and then we discuss at committee, and there's a list we put up and we all have a vote on it. And then if I've seen the film and nobody else has, I might have a bigger say in what's going on.
Well, you're the president.
But we try to be democratic about it. But I mean, the write-up might be fabulous, and I'll have looked at the film and gone, oh, it's not very good. They're not going to like it. And then we do try to, it's a delicate balance, because we have really a strong core of members who want strong art house. They want art house that's not like Mary Poppins in French, if you know what I mean. Yeah. So we have those people and to make happy. And then we have a bigger sort of area of the Film Society membership that just want to see Mary Poppins in French. You know, they want a film that makes them feel happy.
Can you give me an example of the core demo would that lie? Females, 60 plus,
I
males?
I think probably, I would say 60-40 to female. Usually husband and wife join together. Yes. And I would say, I used to think that most of our members were older than 60, but when they fill applications in, unfortunately we don't ask for age. It's not relevant as long as they're over 18. But I suspect that there's a lot more people in between the 45 to 60 demographic than I originally thought. And our 5 p.m. session is the most popular, you know, people coming from work or just, you know, racing in right after work to go to the movies first. So that kind of reflects, you know, the fact that we have a lot of people that are at work and are working. They may not get to as many films as, say, the other people because they have more selection of time to go. But yeah, I think that we've got more than we think in, like, I used to think 60 and plus, but I think probably older, younger than that.
And what about your elevation to the position of president? Forget that there's 300 plus on the waiting list.
Yeah.
So not only did you kind of, I imagine you had to go on the waiting list as well.
No, when I first came, I didn't. There wasn't a waiting
list.
There
wasn't a kind of demand.
Because there was only, three or 400 people. We were screening at the Old Bowls Club.
Okay.
At the start. And
And then how did you, it's a vote? How long's the term?
The term's a year. So we have an AGM every year. But I think it's sort of a position by default. Not too many people want to put their hands
there
up.
There are a lot of
often,
organizations like that, though, aren't there? Where it's like, oh, gee, that's quite the gig. But she does get to travel. You do get to go to Sydney and Melbourne and go to those. So they're kind of the perks of the job.
Well, the Film Society doesn't support that financially.
No, I understand.
That's my interest.
I understand.
And so, but yeah, it is, you know, there is a lot to be said for, you know, the support of the society to, you know, I was at the Toronto Film Festival last year. It was the first time, and it was absolutely fabulous. It was fabulous. They were screening in these multiplexes where there'd be 18 cinemas in the multiplex, and every one of them would be part of the festival. It was just amazing and so much fun. A lot of waiting in lines, but you talk to people that are waiting in lines. So, yeah, to become president, it's not that difficult. In fact, I'm always looking for someone to put up their hand to become president. But usually what we do is we have quite a big committee. We have 15. So people within the committee come on, and then they learn how everything works, and then it's a good time to say, well, what do you think about stepping up and, you know, giving it a go? I mean, we're always there. I would never like just step up immediately and leave anyone. And there's the vice president's role, who usually knows everything that the president does. So that's how we fill in those holes.
You mentioned Run Lola Run before. Do you have a standout movie that's yours, like one that you keep coming back to and you think that movie
is so hard?
It is a pretty hard question, isn't it?
Because it just changes all the time. And there's so many, you know, so many kinds of film. I adored Blade Runner, and I adored Blade Runner 2049. I know a lot of people didn't like it. It was long, but I thought it was amazing. So I guess that was for sort of the last year or so, that would be a really standout film for me.
This was a new one,
Yeah, there was the original Blade Runner, and then
Do you know I saw that recently? The Harrison Ford?
The original one, yeah.
Only recently.
And then nothing happened for 20 years. Like,
no.
It just, nothing came up.
Well, when did it come out? The 80s? Is that an 80s film?
Yeah.
Blade Runner?
Yeah.
Well, I only watched it, like I said, recently, maybe in the last 30 months. And the thing that I found amusing about it was that I was still reading newspapers in it.
I know.
And the flashing, like the TDK Atari signs in the back. And I thought, isn't that? And yet, you know, it's a movie that's set in the future.
Yeah.
But you know, what do you, like, do you love the abstract film? Like, for me, there are a lot of films that people, if you meant, you know, they go, oh, that movie does, like Mulholland Drive or Vanilla Sky.
Yeah.
That just doesn't make sense. But I love, you know, for me, my passion about film is like a piece of abstract art, where you get something out of it and I get something completely different out of it.
That's exactly right. And I love films that don't resolve themselves at the end. I really do. I mean, one of the more recent ones was The Three Billboards.
I haven't seen
outside
that yet,
of Missouri.
Yes, yep.
That film really doesn't have an ending that you can say, I know what's going to happen. It leaves you hanging. And I think that's a good thing, because then people can go away and think, well, how could that end? How would that end? And it's a point of discussion. If everything's all wrapped up in a neat bow, that's fine. But it makes it more curious for me to see, like, well, what happened to that person? What do you think? How could that resolve itself?
Isn't that interesting? I have an 8-year-old who's at year 4 at the moment. And as they learn to craft a story, you know, they're taught that a story must have a beginning and a middle and an end. And obviously that's the building blocks.
Yes.
But then when we come to film, and probably from Tarantino in the 90s, I'm not sure, you know, a film, though, doesn't necessarily have to have a beginning and a middle and an end. It can just be almost like a preview or a tiny insight into a very short timeline. And it doesn't have to complete itself or resolve itself in those 90 minutes. And that's what I look for and I love.
Yeah.
In pieces of film as well. Do you have any favorites like that?
Oh, yeah. I'll try to leave that with me. I'll think about it. But the small, the idea, well, people might often call them small films. Like there's an Australian film right now called Lucky that's playing was playing at Majestic. And it's just a little cut of life, a moment in time, very brief moment in time, of someone doing something in a film, and it doesn't take you anywhere except during, like, maybe 24 hours or 48 hours of someone's life. It doesn't actually take you any further, and it doesn't actually come in from, but it still tells you an important part, something that was significant at that moment in time. It's sort of, you know, the old Buddha be in the moment. You are in the moment with that person at that time. And then after that, that person goes on. But you don't know.
Life continues.
Life goes on.
And back to that, you know, movies or stories that are incomplete, then you form your own conclusions. Yeah. And then that generates off, you know, into a discussion with friends. What do you think happened there? What do you think happened there? And that's what I love about certain films. Are you happy with NIFF? It's coming up to its
yeah,
third year for
yeah,
2018.
I'm really, really happy with NIFF at the moment.
NIFF is the Noosa International Film Festival.
It's in October, the end of October.
Run twice now.
Yep, this is its third year, 25th of October to the 28th of October this year. I've been working super hard on the feature film part of it at the moment, trying to get some a good opening night film. We like to do an Australian opening night film. And the trick is to get a film that's not going to be released across the country and all over the place before October. And it's very hard to pin anybody down about their release dates and can you give us an exclusivity to it? Because the distributors just want to make, I mean, they want to make money. And they want to make money for the film and the filmmaker. So they want to take the most advantage of when they can put a film on. So we have the feature film section. We've got a couple of really interesting events coming up this year that we're working on.
Can I just go back to how do you pitch? So what's the advantage for a distributor to have their movie exclusively for a film festival? What's the pitch from your camp?
From our camp, it's that it's word of mouth. If that film is well received, our strength here is that we have a lot of people that were from Sydney, were from Melbourne, were from Brisbane, and they've moved here, and they often go back to those capital cities. And if they like the film, they're telling their friends back in Sydney, back in Melbourne. So if that film has not been screened at the Palace or any of the sort of the local cinemas and is just doing a film festival circuit, that's why. And it also gives the filmmaker more accolades because they've got the laurel that says it's been at a film festival. So if they're trying to promote it overseas, for instance, and they've shown it at some good film festivals and got some good reviews through that, then it really is helpful for them to promote further. From a distributor's point of view, it's probably it's if they want to release it afterwards and they get good word of mouth on it, then it's going to increase their sales in the normal cinemas. Of course, if it's a bad film, they're in trouble.
Yeah. How did Jungle go last year? I quite enjoyed
really
it.
Really good. It went well. I mean, that was in Melbourne. That had opened the Melbourne Film Festival. I think it had mixed reviews. I think some people found it a little squeamish about it, but I thought it was a very good story.
Yeah.
It was based on a real story. Yeah,
it was true life.
I mean, that's exactly right. And it was, I think it did really well.
And hasn't Daniel Radcliffe, I haven't watched one single Harry Potter movie. I've got no interest.
No,
my son
either.
Does. But he's done some great stuff. There was one where he played an FBI agent and he was almost like a Nazi hunter in that role, and really tough, gritty.
He plays gritty roles, yeah.
And in Jungle, I thought he was
he did a really good job.
As well. So he's really developed into a fine kind of adult.
Yeah,
actor,
and I like to see what Australians are doing with their films because Lucky Country is just, I think it's finished screening now at Noosa, but I saw that in Toronto. It was a Warwick Thornton film. He did Samson and Delilah, and he has a take on filmmaking that's quite unique and quite his cinematography that he does that's of his films is amazing. So I find the way that filmmakers work with film. One of the filmmakers that I'm working with right now, he's making a small independent film, and basically he's funded it mostly through social media and getting people on board to support his film. And when he gets it to a certain point, then he'll go to some of the funding bodies and ask for the extra money just to push it, which I think is really an interesting... There's quite a few films that they get a little bit of seed money. They usually call it seed money or development money from, say, Screen Queensland. And after that, if they don't get the money for marketing, then the film just sort of... you know, languishes. So I feel bad about that.
Is that whole landscape changing very similar to e-publishing? Someone that's making music in their bedroom and getting it out onto YouTube, the fact that Netflix commission, you know, Netflix-only films. So you talk about funding. I mean, everyone can make a piece of work or some content these days, but it's about getting noticed out there in a world that's, you know, there's a billion.
It's all about sales. Yeah.
Getting noticed and getting seen, isn't it? And getting it promoted. And really, is that's really where the money, when you talk about funding for a particular project, a lot of that would have to be about the promotion of it.
Well, unfortunately, sometimes it isn't. Sometimes they get the money for the production, and then at the end of it, they have a great product.
Yeah.
And if they aren't able to get it out, and if it doesn't, where this is where word of mouth can work or social media can work really well. But you're right, it's a hugely changing environment for making films. Netflix, often films will go straight to pay on demand.
Yep.
They go straight there. They don't even get a cinema release at all. They're also trying a model where they're simultaneously releasing in cinema. In Britain, they've tried this, where they're Curzon is a big theater group there, and they're simultaneously releasing on pay on demand and in the cinema. So it gives the viewer an option if they want to stay home and watch the film, or if they prefer the big screen environment and going out. And they're just seeing how is that going to work, because they just need to get the films out there. They need to get people watching the films.
What would the thinking be, though, behind that? Would that be if people would people go, it's too expensive to get a movie ticket, but I'll pay $8 or $9 to watch it at home? Or what's the thinking
I think there's that. I think some people, I mean, it can be a very expensive night out if you're going as a couple.
The popcorn and the drinks
right away, a small loan. Yeah, exactly. And also the babysitter, you know,
true. You
can't leave the kids at home. And so it turns, that's why a lot of, that's what I was just speaking about that when I made my president's speech about the cinema becoming an event, because the thing about it is that it forces you to focus on the movie. You don't decide halfway through if you're at home that you're going to pay a bill. You don't decide that, you're just going to stop that film there and go and, you know, see what's in the fridge five times, because, you know, it might be something different in the fridge the next time that you missed the first time. So you keep stopping the film. So it forces you to focus on the film. It's an event. You've got people, particularly, I think it's interesting, things like comedies. If you're sitting at home by yourself, sure, you could be laughing away, but if you're in a cinema and everybody is enjoying that film,
a shared experience,
killing themselves laughing, yeah. Well, hey, you know, you think, well, that is really funny.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think going to the cinema, making that appointment, and heading in there, and it's still got it's a special event,
yeah,
and a shared experience.
Yeah,
and I don't think there's anything that compares to it. Now, big screen TVs and content on demand has made that home theater experience more enjoyable, and you can still be engaged in that, but there's still nothing like a trip to the cinemas. Yeah. I think cinemas will survive. You know, they were talking about the death of cinemas when TV came along and all that.
Yeah.
But they will go on. There's a,
and again, what they're doing there, which is, I think it's really with, particularly with art house and, you know, for independent films, is they're changing the model of what a cinema looks like. Because I don't know if have you been to the Majestic over at Nambour at all?
Yes.
Okay. Well, have you been in the little cinemas?
I've only been there once.
Okay, so
I'm guessing it was the main.
Yeah, there's one big cinema,
right?
But then they've added three or four small 50-seat cinemas.
Yeah,
and the screen is really big. The seats are super comfortable.
Is it like a gold class experience?
It's a gold class experience, but for the normal ticket price.
Okay.
And that allows them to be showing four or five independent films at the same time without having, you know, five people in the cinema and taking up a huge amount of space. And a few years ago, I heard someone speaking about this down at the Gold Coast. There's a movie convention down there, and it was an American. And he went in, he was picking up these chains in small towns, and he just changed the model completely so that he had three or four small seating cinemas. They were surrounding an eating area, so people could come in and out. They could, they could bring drinks in. So they were licensed. So it was turning it into the gold class experience without the gold class ticket price, and that was working really well for him. People were making the effort to go out, and because they knew that they could have dinner first, then they could take their wine, and they could go in and watch the movie. But they were still focused on the movie. They, you know, it was quiet. It was, there was no kids, nobody in the background asking them to read them a story before they went to bed. Nothing to disrupt their watching experience, and that was really working.
Holly, what's your role with the Noosa International Film Festival?
This year I'm the curator, okay. Which means a lot of things. It means I'm sort of oversee that we have the short film competition. We've already had over 100 entries.
And has that been growing?
It grows. Well, we're around 200 entries, but we can't. Then we have a screening group that watches. We have 14 or 15 people that watch all the films, and we narrow it down to 50 or 60 films, and then we have a judging committee that then nominates the best films. Because our commitment to the filmmaker is that if it is officially selected, it will be shown. So if we have 50 or 60 short films, we have to find time to show all of those films in a proper environment. So that we have the short films. So I've been overseeing that as they come in, and of course I need to watch them all because I can't not watch them. It's not fair to the filmmakers. So I have to be on top of the films, and if there's something wrong with the way the filmmaker is submitted, or it's not playing, or they forgot to put the subtitles on, then there's the feature film program, which is the opening film plus feature films. And this year I'm doing a special environmental film program out at Umundi at the School of Arts. So we're having a feature film concerning the environment, and then a short film session with your environmentally focused films. And then we have our special workshops, which go for 2 days for the filmmakers. And that's another thing that I'm trying to pull together to try and get people to do.
Well, it sounds like a big job.
Oh yeah.
Have you ever had a desire to make film?
No. The more I learn about the more I learn about how tricky. Well, it isn't tricky, but it's tricky to get it right to make a powerful film, and that's why I think I really enjoy watching the short films. It's the very clever in telling a story in a very short amount of time, and I think the short film genre, again, you know, we were talking about not having a resolved ending. I think often in a short film, you kind of need to, because, you know, it's people get frustrated if they're watching something and they're really getting to it and they're left hanging. Although having said that, some of them don't, but usually they have much more, they often have more structure, except for the experimental films shot with drones or time lapse. So there's a lot of drone cinema coming in.
Talk about new technology and how that's impacting some of the work that you're seeing.
Okay, well, we get a lot of entries that are shot with drones. So they're landscapes, and they often don't have much of a narrative. So it might be flying up or over Iceland and all of the ice. You know, it's just beautiful. It's sort of like, you know, watching David Attenborough. You know, it's like, okay.
Yeah.
So there's no story, but it's beautiful to watch. We've got virtual reality. This year we're hoping to do a virtual reality program where, you know, that is total immersive technology. And in fact,
have you experienced it? I haven't even put those goggles on.
Well, I know. It's pretty wild. The goggles that they have just at this moment require you to have a phone in the headset. So you're actually looking at a something you've downloaded on a phone, or something that has been downloaded onto a mobile phone. But within weeks, the Chinese are releasing a phoneless headset. So it'll have a little chip, which will have the film in it, mm-hmm. which will be a huge leap in that, because obviously the headphone with the phone and everything on it is quite heavy. So the chip will already be in the visual part of it. You'll be able to watch it without, it's just amazing. Yeah.
Well, it's mind-boggling when you think about it. I mean, will it take, you know, 3Ds kind of...
I know, I...
It seems to be out of favor again.
I was with you on that. I thought, what's virtual reality going to do, really? Because 3D sort of came and went, and it wasn't totally embraced. And I mean, there are fewer and fewer films that are using 3D, and even some of the ones that have a 3D version, I suspect they're not really shot for 3D. They've just added a few 3D scenes.
When it's done well, it is quite spectacular. Oh, yeah. I haven't really been immersed in that 3D. I don't care whether something's in 3D or not. But I remember I was working in a radio station in Brisbane, and U2 had released, and it's never come out, and it was only an in-cinema release, U2 3D.
Yeah.
And it was so vivid and so real that at one stage there was a shot from the crowd back towards the stage, and like a girl sitting on a gentleman's shoulders.
Right.
And it was this long shot. To me, it was so real, and you were so immersed in it. I actually thought she was sitting on the shoulders of someone that was in the cinema. And for a moment, my mind was about to call out and say, would you mind? I can't, you know, you're interrupting the... I mean, that's how...
Because you said, you're in my way.
Well, that's how realistic that... Yeah. I'll always remember that. Yeah. But outside of that, no. You know, you'd go into a retailer and they go, well, this TV's got 3D and you get the glasses and you get this and you get that. No, not so much.
Well, I think that the technology will not only be used for film, but will be used for a lot of other applications, the virtual reality technology. There's two different kinds of experiences. There's the low-level experience, which is the one with your headsets and it's built in. There's another experience, which is called the six-degree experience. And it's more complicated setup. You're kind of connected to a hard drive by a long wire. But the six-degree experience allows you to interact. It's almost like gaming, but I guess it would be a bit like gaming in that you're interacting with the film. So what you do when you're watching it by turning around or walking over into a corner changes the outcome of the film. So you can choose. There was an example of immigrants illegally crossing a border. So you could, there was sort of police running at someone. Someone else was hiding behind a rock. And you were one of the people. You are one of the people in the film. So you can choose to confront the police, or you can choose to run and get behind a rock. And that will affect the end of that film for you. And
that's incredible.
That is just mind-blowing.
All right, we've just spoken about some, you know, intriguing developments in technology when it comes to how films can be experienced. You just mentioned your experience, I mean, or this piece of technology and virtual reality. As a film buff, is there something that you would love to be to have incorporated in that experience? Something that you've never had before, not like Smell-O-Vision or whatever it is, but something that you think, wow, if they did something that brought me here or to this point, then that would complete my experience.
Well, yeah, I mean, I guess that immersive, getting the sound right and getting that immersive sound is pretty important. And I mean, you're a sound man, so you'd know. But I'm not sure about the sensation of smell, but the sensation of movement, and you are moving. I mean, I don't know how. I mean, there's an example where you're actually supervising a factory, and it you can go and pick up a piece of equipment that's down at the end of, or you could direct a robot to go and pick it up, and that's how it's going to be working in a real life sort of situation. If you were in a big rainstorm and you got wet. Or, you know.
Yeah, I understand.
You know what I mean?
If so you're experiencing the same conditions.
The physical, making it more physical, the physicality of it. Yeah. Because at the moment, it's all in your head, but it's really all in your head. I mean, there's another example where it's called Walk the Plank. And you get into a lift and you go up about 40 stories. And then when the lift door opens, there's a plank. And you can either walk out on the plank or you can stay in the lift and go back down again.
Is this like a
virtual reality?
Yeah, right.
Yeah, it's a virtual reality one. And apparently a large percentage of people cannot walk out of the lift and get on that plank because they think they're going to fall, even though they know they're just standing there with a headset on.
Yeah.
And so it's sort of like, whoa, you know, that is so real that it can be, you know, it could psychologically, I'm sure that it can be used by psychiatrists and psychologists to change your way of thinking about things because it's so much into your brain.
Holly Pittman, thank you so much for sharing your love of film.
Yeah, did you guess that?
and just some of that new technology that we
yes.
just, I mean, it's stuff that
it's
you
awesome.
Don't even think about or consider. But then when you start talking about it like virtual reality and you think, wow, yeah, look. But at the end of the day, it's just about a good story, isn't it?
It is.
And it's about a piece of film or a piece of art that when it's done, that you'll talk to your friends about.
That's right.
You go, you've got to see this because it's this or that.
Yeah.
Or it'll take you here and there. Thank you so much.
Thank you, John. Thank you for being here.
I hope you enjoyed that. That's Holly Pittman, president of the Noosa Film Society and volunteer with the Noosa International Film Festival. If you did enjoy that discussion, that chat there with Holly, please feel free to share it on social media. And until next time, remember there'll be two fresh stories up on our website each week, every Monday and Thursdays. Don't forget to come back and visit again in noosamagazine.com.au/conversations.